Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Tuesday Topics, a once-a-week program where persons who are blind or visually impaired or those with interests associated with each of us get together to discuss topics of concern, such as our topic this week, the importance of Braille transcription and Braille transcribers. Before we start this evening's discussion, let me once again review with everybody the general layout of this program. We're going to begin with about 30 minutes of interview with myself, Brian Charlson. I'm acting as this evening's host in the absence of our regular host, Paul Edwards. I'll be interviewing several individuals who are involved in the Braille transcription process. And after we've fleshed out the story of these individuals and their issues associated with Braille transcription, we'll open it up to Q&A from our listening audience. Again, at that point, I'll remind you that we'd like each individual to identify themselves when they ask their initial question and to hold off secondary questions until everybody else has had an opportunity to ask their question. Let's begin by thanking those who are recording the program this evening, those who will review it and turn it into a program for ACB Radio Mainstream, and to George Bias and Talking Communities for providing us with this software that allows us to do this type of over-the-internet conference call. This evening's topic is Braille transcription, and I don't think there's anybody here this evening who can't give a brief story about how a Braille transcriptionist had a positive impact on their lives. I certainly did back when I was 11 years old and lost my vision due to a household chemical accident. When I attended public school the next year in the sixth grade, it was the job of Miss Paulson, my teacher of the visually impaired, or TVI as they're called, taught me Braille for the first time. Most of the reading material we used was hand-transcribed children's books. I remember Curious George, for example, very well. But many, many other books as well through my public school, grade school, and high school years were either directly transcribed by hand by volunteer transcribers or were thermoform copies of books produced by hand originally. Now, there are many different individuals who are associated with this process at different levels. There are those who run organizations that coordinate these efforts, those who are transcribers themselves, and those who proofread the transcription efforts of others to help them in the whole quality control process. I believe we have a number of what happens to all be ladies here this evening who are involved in that process. I'm going to ask them to simply introduce themselves and describe in a few sentences their history in terms of Braille transcription. So I'm going to open the mic specifically for our guests this evening who've been asked to come and talk about their Braille transcription experience. Lynette, you were one, were you not?
Yes, I've been a transcriber for almost 20 years. I started out learning on the Braille writer, moved very quickly to computers, and every year we come up with some new thing to help us do this quicker, faster, and better.
Are you doing your transcription as an individual or as part of an organized effort?
I work mainly for the Florida Instructional Materials Center through my local Braille group. I'm a volunteer transcriber through my local Braille group.
How did you first get involved in that group?
A friend of mine was taking the class, and she thought I would be interested in it. I was not retired at the time, but I'm a retired librarian, and it just seemed to fit the focus of what I believe people should be able to have available to them in terms of things to read.
How many members are there of your group, and is it a mix in terms of those who hand transcribe using a Perkins Brailler and those who use computer technology to get the job done?
Nobody in the group uses the Perkins Brailler anymore except to do things for corrections or page numbering or something minor, labels or something. We have approximately 40 people. There is a class every year for new transcribers, and we have a little subclass or subgroup of people who produce graphics for the rest of us.
When you say that you conduct classes, are the teachers of those classes existing transcriptionists, or is it a task of a special group of individuals?
We have two women who teach the class every year, and then we have two proofreaders who proofread all of the students' homework. Linda Jacobson is one of those proofreaders, and it's an ongoing 9-month class that we start every year in September.
Now, are these transcriptionists certified as transcriptionists?
Yes, all of our transcribers who produce or teach are certified. The students, when they become certified, begin working for us, producing textbooks and literature and whatnot.
How difficult did you find going through the whole process of becoming a certified transcriptionist? I take it that was through the National Library Service?
I went through the class at our local group. The class is based on the NLS program, but we do not send our lessons into NLS to be proofread. They're done right on site. Someone told me it takes 9 months to do the course, which is how long it takes to have a baby, and it's about the same amount of effort.
I believe you mentioned that there is a proofreader who's here with us this evening, and I wondered if she might introduce herself.
My name is Linda Jacobson. Yes, I am a certified proofreader, also a certified transcriber, and I do contract work for the National Library Service as well.
How long have you been a transcriber?
I mostly do proofreading, but I've been certified in transcription and in proofreading for probably about 7 years now.
You're associated with the same group, or do you do this strictly as a solo contractor?
I'm associated with Temple Sisterhood Braille Group here in Jacksonville, and I work with some of the students, well, the students that try to take the course through them. But I also do contract work with NLS, proofreading the lessons for the transcribing course, as well as proofreading the trial manuscripts that are sent in.
Now, I have a couple of friends who've gone through this process during the course of the past 3 or 4 years. There was a point at which, and I'm not sure if it's still happening, that there's difficulty in sending your lessons into NLS following the anthrax scare, since all of NLS's mail goes through a rather rigorous process to assure that it's not contaminated in some fashion. Can you tell us more about that situation?
Actually, the people that I have as students for the transcribing course, which is the course that Lynette was speaking about, and it's the course that they use for correspondence as well as some groups like the Temple Sisterhood use it as their course materials. All of the students that I have, which is probably about 125 at this point, they send them directly to me at my home. Probably about a third of those students are blind people. They're working out of the Braille materials, and the other two-thirds are print readers. Actually, last year we had a couple people in the class at the Temple Sisterhood who would have benefited from large print materials, but they don't have those. Now, when I do suggest that the students send their trial manuscripts, it does have to go through NLS, and I suggest to them that they send them either UPS or FedEx, because that tends to get to them faster, because mail has been delayed quite a bit because of that scare.
Does anybody who's currently on this chat session know much about transcription of specialized codes, such as Nemeth Braille code or music code? Anybody here certified to do either of those codes?
Hi, I'm Meg Wagner. I'm certified in Nemeth code. I'm the other transcriber that was invited to be on. And I'll tell you, I started teaching myself Braille in about 1962 to write to a friend who stayed at Emory University to get her master's. I got married and moved to Miami with my husband. And so I taught myself first grade Braille with a slate and stylus I got from the lighthouse in Miami. And then I learned on a slate and stylus. I went through the whole course on a slate and stylus in 1969 in Columbia, South Carolina, and had 10 pages done on my manuscript when in January of 70 I had my third child, and did not have time to do any more with it, because in 6 months later we moved. My husband was in the Army there, and then we moved to St. Petersburg in the summer of 1970, which is where we've lived ever since. And when that third child was 3 and a half and started nursery school, there was a big ad in the St. Petersburg paper about the Pinellas Braille Group and classes. So I started those classes, and they had Braille writers, which to me at that point was the greatest thing since sliced bread, after learning with a slate and stylus. So I learned on the Braille writer then and got certified in 1974. And, of course, then in the early 80s, Bob Stepp wrote the program for the Apple computer called Edit, and then that's progressed to Edit PC and now Braille 2000. And that is just light years from the Braille writer and the Slayton stylus, and it's been absolutely wonderful. But then I got certified in Nemeth. Well, I started Nemeth in 75. Started learning from the galley proofs of the instruction manual with Donna Pastore, who was working at the Library of Congress at that point, and did Nemeth and then got certified when they started having certification in Nemeth. So, yes, I know a little bit about that.
So, when all of you ladies mentioned that you're using computers to do your transcription, are you typing print text and then using Braille translation software such as Duxbury? Or are you, or maybe in addition, are you doing six-key key entry?
This is Meg again. We're using six-key entry. We use SDF JKL on the computer keyboard, just like the six keys on the Brailler, and we get Braille dots on the screen, and we output to a Braille embosser. The program that most of us are using here in Florida is this Braille 2000, and it works very much like Microsoft Word, if you're familiar with that. A lot of the commands and shortcuts are the same, and we can make macros, which we call speed Braille keys, and it works like a word processor, and it's a really fantastic program.
Ryan, this is Linda. I think Anna Blade, who is also a transcriber, she does use Megadots for Braille translation.
Yeah, I think somebody did mention that there's also a cadre of people who specialize in doing Braille graphics. Now, is that really more an issue of through collage and those kind of methods, creating raised line images that can then be thermoformed, etc.? Or is this using Braille embossing techniques?
This is Lynette. The graphics section of my local group uses all these different methods. They use some of the puff paper, they use collage, they use different things. It's mostly to save the transcriber's time so that we can concentrate on the transcription, and they do a wonderful job of the graphics, and then we merge them. We have not yet found a computer program that does graphics that we really like.
Have any of you noticed any decrease in the demand for transcribed Braille as opposed to Braille that's produced by one of the larger Braille printing houses?
I'm working on three books at the moment. I've never seen a decreased demand.
I've been a good friend of Judy Dixon at NLS, who at least for a short time was responsible for the certification process at NLS. I don't think that's the case today, but it was for a couple of years anyway. And a couple of interesting things that she brought to my attention was that any individual who went through the process of starting the Braille training and certification process could acquire a set of books required to go through the training process, but that was a relatively expensive thing. I think some of our listeners may have been surprised by the number of students that our friend here who's doing the proofreading is handling as students. So I'd ask again, 120, is that what you said, the number of students you're currently managing?
Yes, and those are just the students that are taking the transcription course. Yes, the library offers the Braille transcribing course materials free to anybody that wants to take them. And if there's no group in their area, then they have the different people that are contractors for NLS take them on as students. And, yeah, I have I'm only one of four people that are with the Braille development section that do proofreading for the coursework. Yeah, I have at least 120 students, and there are two other contractors, one of which only does proofreading for the trial manuscript, the other of which does proofreading for the coursework as well. And then there's also someone on site, Linda Bobo, who does proofreading for the Braille or for the print students for the coursework, and then John Wilkinson, who does proofreading for the Braille students. Those are the two people that are on site. And Judy Dixon currently is the is the person that is acting head of the Braille development section.
Of the 120 people that you're currently working with, how many of them do you anticipate are going to make it through the entire process to become certified transcriptionists?
As usual with students, you find some that are much better than others, but of those 120, I would suspect that probably two-thirds of those people will eventually be Braille transcribed.
Is 9 months, which I heard earlier, likened to the length of a pregnancy, is that about typical for from beginning to end of a student going through this process, or is it more lengthy these days?
When they're correspondent students, it takes a whole lot longer. Lynette was talking about the Temple Sisterhood, who offers the course on site, and people come in weekly and get their lessons and get them proofread and everything. So, of course, that goes a whole lot faster. No, 9 months for a correspondent student, it doesn't really happen.
Most people here, though we did hear the story of starting the learning with slate and stylus, moving up to Braille writer, and then on up to PC. But everybody who's here this evening does transcription by way of a PC. I assume Windows-based PC, using one of the three primary programs, mostly doing the keying by way of 6-key rather than typing on the regular QWERTY keyboard and then doing the transcription or translation using the software.
One other interesting thing we can do with the Braille 2000, we can scan material, print material, and save it in an RTF file in Word and import it into Braille 2000, and it comes in fairly good grade 2 Braille. And if we insert some what we call translation typing commands into the RTF file, it will also come in fairly well formatted.
Which would you, ladies, say is more difficult, the Braille code itself or the formatting rules to master?
I'd say the formatting rules. That's most important for Braille readers, it seems to me, and that's so important for people to learn formatting.
Formatting is sometimes difficult, especially in the textbook. We used to groan and joke that the publishers would lie awake at night trying to figure out new ways of formatting to baffle the transcribers.
When you're producing your manuscripts at this point, are you doing so in an 11x11.5 format, or are you called upon to do it in the narrower 8.5x11 format more frequently these days?
It's required for the coursework to use the 11x11.5 sheets.
As far as I know, all textbooks except possibly first grade or kindergarten are 11.5x11 also. Sometimes I think the lower grades are supposed to be done on smaller paper, but working with FIMC, as far as I know, they always do it on 11x11.5 paper also.
One of my ongoing concerns is how difficult it is to find individuals who can transcribe Braille music and proofread Braille music. Do any of the groups you're associated with involve themselves in the creation of Braille music at all?
We don't have a Braille music transcriber in our group except for one man who went through our group's classes several years ago and works in his own business that has something else to do with music, and I believe I heard recently that he had gone through the music transcription course and was transcribing music, but he has sort of dropped out of our group and is working individually doing his own thing, so I don't know that for sure, but I know very few music transcribers. I've heard that it's a very, very difficult code to learn.
How about proofreading of Braille music?
I suspect that doesn't exist.
I know two music Braillists, and neither of them get their work proofread because there's just no one available to do it.
Actually, the same thing sort of holds true with Nemeth, because there are so few proofreaders for Nemeth code, too. So what I do, I proofread, and my husband helps me by holding copy about the third time I go through it, and I proofread the Braille dots while he checks it against the print copy, but it does not get professionally proofread.
I find that all quite amazing and to some degree disturbing, in that many students who come through the rehabilitation agency that I work for, the Carroll Center for the Blind, who want to go on to college and study music, do not themselves know how to use Braille music, even if they're Braille readers. And they have been told, in fact, the lack of Braille music material and Braille music transcribers is the number one reason why they lack those materials. Seems to me really unfortunate. The same thing for Nemeth Code and how discouraging it must be for those who are involved in getting a degree in the sciences not to have ready access to transcribed material in Nemeth Code.
I think you would be amazed at the amount of general Braille that is not proofread. It is up to the transcriber to do the very best job he or she can and proofread it themselves.
I live in Watertown, Massachusetts, city of about 5 square miles or so, and our local Commission on Disability puts together a dining guide specifically in the area of accessibility features of each of the 88 or so restaurants in town, and I was disappointed to find that less than 6 of them have Braille menus available, in spite of the fact that we have a very large population of Braille reading blind and visually impaired individuals. Is any of the material that you're transcribing material that we adults out in the community might come across, or is it primarily textbook-related activities in the Florida system?
In our Braille group here in Pinellas County, our primary responsibility is to Braille textbooks for kindergarten through 12th grade, and we do that through the Florida Instructional Materials Center. We do, however, have a number of people who don't want to do textbooks. They don't want to have to struggle with the formatting, and they only do literary work. And for a long time, we did literary work for the Jewish Braille Institute, and now that they've turned their library over to NLS, or NLS has turned theirs over to JBI anyway, they've merged, we're not getting work from them either. So our literary Braillists have been looking for things to do. So we're doing more, looking more for things for them to do, and recently have been contacted about doing a Presbyterian hymnal. So we're doing some things like that. They've talked to the regional library about doing things that could be available through web Braille, and so we're just still sort of in a state of change here with that sort of thing.
As a Braille reader myself, at the number of restaurants that I go to that don't have Braille menus.
My Jacksonville group is like Meg's in that we mainly do textbooks, but we do on a time-available basis menus, recipes, all kinds of other materials for people in the community who need them, government agencies, individuals, whatever anybody wants done.
At this point, what I'd like to do is to open the microphone to anybody who would like to ask questions, express opinions, tell brief stories about the importance of Braille transcription in your lives. So I'll open the microphone and ask that you ask one question and identify yourself, including your location.
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Well, I went to the School for the Blind from 47 to 60, and I learned Braille early on at school. I first learned to use the Braille writer before I learned to use the slate and stylus. So it was pre-Perkins, of course, but I learned that way. I think that Braille is a necessary part of a child's life. Learning to read is important. And I'm glad that people who have been able to get Braille in public school have been able to get it that way, because that was a concern of mine about mainstreaming, is that a lot of the teachers don't have the qualifications or the training to teach Braille. But I'm glad for those that do it, and I think that more restaurants ought to be having Braille menus available for blind people so that they can look the same as the same as sighted people.
Brian, this is Ann Byington. I have a question. I have looked at the rules for, I can't think of the name of the book, but it's American English Braille. I don't know the name of the book. But anyway, I helped a student of mine do some transcribing, and I consider myself a fairly literate and capable Braille user, but the rules that I read seemed a bit contradictory, and they also seemed to deal more with material that is hand-transcribed or transcribed via the Perkins. I'd like to know what the transcribers feel about the computer programming as it produces quality translations, I guess I should say, And if you agree with me that the teaching material is more geared toward using the Braille writer and the slate to produce Braille than a computer program.
I believe you're referring to English Braille American Edition, 1994. That's the code book that tells you all the rules for Braille transcribing. I don't know, it's just pretty much the rules that people have to follow in order to transcribe Braille properly.
This is Doug from Daytona Beach. Lynette, you had mentioned FIMC. Would either of you care to elucidate a little bit more on the way that transcribers actually work through a third party, that organized thing?
As far as our group goes, for textbook transcribers, working with the Florida Instructional Materials Center, generally speaking, Juanita posts on the Internet, sends us all an email telling what requests have come in for what materials, how many pages, whether it has graphics, you know, whether it needs Nemeth, that sort of thing. And we check our email, and if we're available and would like to take on a project, we call her and say, yes, we'd like to have that. Generally speaking, though, we all check the email and try to get assignments for ourselves.
Does one book go to one transcriber, or do they ever break up a book and have different individuals do different sections?
Sometimes we share books. It depends on the size of the book. I used to have a friend in town that shared math books with me, but that was a number of years ago, but we would split the book up. And we have in the past shared books, and just we cut the spine off and divide the book up.
Have you ever found yourself being asked to transcribe something you thought you had transcribed in the past?
This is Lynette. I wanted to get a little more depth on the FIMC question. The school districts in Florida request a book through FIMC, and then FIMC tries to find a transcriber who can produce that book. Sometimes they have to contract out, but normally they try to get a volunteer to do it. I have not ever done a book that I thought was done before, that I had done before. I have done books that I have later found out have been done in other states.
Brian, I have a question. This is Bonnie. I'm a little confused about how this process works. As I understand it, you're taking a Braille copy and then transcribing it and putting it into book form in Braille. Could you tell us a little bit about how that process works? I don't quite understand why I understand the value of Braille. I love Braille, and I run two groups on Fillmore that have to do with reading, and one has to do with Braille. But I want to know, how does this process work, and what do you start with, and what is it that's different in the finished? I understand the finished product becomes a book, but what is the rough draft, and what do you begin with?
We begin with a print book from the publisher through FIMC and the teacher who requests it. We take that print book, format it into proper Braille formatting, and then transcribe it using all the proper formatting commands and tools that we need. It is then sent embossed and sent back to FIMC, and from there it goes to the student. We try to keep things, volumes to about 80 pages. We try to keep chapters together, units if possible, that kind of thing. But we start out with print.
Our group sends discs to FIMC, and they do the embossing and binding and so forth, because we just don't have the capability to. We have an embosser, but we have no binding capabilities, and our embossers are not that sturdy to do that quantity of work. So we do it on the computer, we store it on a disc, we send the disc to FIMC, and they do the embossing.
Do you take books that are in print? Are you able to read print? Is that what you have to start with? I thought we were talking about people who were transcribing Braille who read Braille. Are you able to read Braille, or are you sighted and read Braille, or that's the part I guess I don't understand?
Meg, Anna, and I are all sighted. I'm not sure about Anna. Meg and I both sight read Braille. I cannot touch read Braille. I don't know if Anna or Meg can. And as I said, we take the print book and put it into Braille and work from there.
This is Meg. I strictly sight read the Braille also, and I'm a sighted volunteer transcriber too.
If I were to take this course and I cannot read print at all, what good would it do for me to take it, being that I'm not? My product I want to transcribe to is in print. What's your advice on that?
This is Meg. I'd get the book on tape. There's so many books on tape now that if you wanted to transcribe a book and could find it on tape or CD, you could listen to it and transcribe it into Braille.
I'd also suggest, Karen, that most blind transcriptionists that I know start with print, use a scanner to scan it into an electronic form, then edit that electronic form. They may occasionally need sighted assistance if some part of the scan were horribly wrong, but generally speaking, they transcribe by modifying the scanned text, going through the process of formatting that scanned text according to Braille rules prior to embossing it. Again, in as much as proofreading is for the most part a luxury, whether or not the book is being transcribed by a sighted person from print into Braille or by a blind person from a scanned file into Braille, the end result, as long as it gets over the information included in the original print, it seems to me that that's an appropriate way for a blind person to be a transcriptionist.
This is Linda. Generally, the reason that people that are blind try to take the transcribing course is to learn the rules of Braille, because many people, even though they read Braille, they don't know what the proper rules are.
Do you know if many of the 120 students that you're dealing with are teachers of the visually impaired who are taking Braille as part of their college coursework that's required?
Many of them actually are working with visually impaired people in different school districts across, in the United States. And amazingly enough, one of the bigger programs for people that are learning to transcribe Braille are within the prison systems.
I would just like to say, this is Bonnie again, that I think that Braille transcription is a wonderful thing. I know there's actually a society to preserve Braille, and I also think that Braille is extremely important, even if we can't possibly do all of it. Of course, punctuation would be difficult if you were working with a tape and you were totally blind trying to transcribe, but I realize we're not talking about a perfect world. However, without Braille, we will have another kind of illiteracy in a sense, even though we have people who can read on tape, and that's certainly a form of reading. Without Braille, we have poor spellers, and I think that people comprehend differently. Some people comprehend very well through audio. Some people comprehend very well through being able to read, and Braille is as close as a blind person is ever going to get to being able to read visually, actually sit down and have the pleasure of physically reading a book. So I think you're wonderful.
Well, I think that that's also true. I mean, if people don't have the knowledge of Braille, and if they don't read Braille, especially in the formative years, they won't know as well how to spell words, because sometimes I think by reading it and seeing it, that's the only way that you can see how a word is supposed to be spelled. And sometimes you can do it by audio, but I think you need Braille to be able to see it.
And one thing that I wanted to say is that oftentimes working with different organizations, I tell them that the Braille that's produced by the volunteer groups is much better Braille than that you might receive when you pay for it.
I would think it would be a lot easier to stay awake reading Braille than listening to a tape. I mean, I stay awake better, although I can go to sleep reading a print book, but listening to a tape, so often I go to sleep and then I wake up and have to rewind the tape and figure out where I was when I fell asleep.
That is absolutely true. And another thing I would like to ask all of you, I go to a Methodist church, and things come up for us, like, for instance, in my church, they're getting a Braille praise book. And I was wondering, where does a person go, for instance, I'm not in your state, where does one go to find an organization that can copy that praise book into Braille if I should want that to be done?
That's a good question. I know the National Library Service has a publication called Volunteers Who Produce Books, and that lists Braille transcribing groups and taping groups all over the country, and that might be a place to start. National Braille Association has groups that do transcribing, but if you looked in the Volunteers Who Produce Books, you could find a group close by that might do it.
You might also check with Trinity United Methodist Church in Arizona. I got my MAS handbook from there.
If I were out looking for an entity to Braille something for me, I do think I'd go first to the NLS book that's been referenced here. I'd also go online and check with the American Foundation for the Blind. Since they have a literacy center out of Atlanta, they've gathered a lot of resources to assist individuals in accessing materials in alternative formats. Also, the American Printing House for the Blind has a large repository of information, one of which is a listing, though nobody claims the perfect complete listing, but nonetheless a listing of organizations and individuals who transcribe Braille.
And in answer to your question, I think it was Bonnie, regarding getting spiritual materials, another source you can go to is the Aurora Mission. Aurora Mission is, I think, out of Bradenton, Florida. And actually, the library, if you check with your library, they actually have a circular, I think it's called Bibles and Spiritual Materials. The Aurora Mission does do for several churches or whatever. Most major churches do have programs to provide materials for that church in accessible format. And by the way, you mentioned Methodists. I almost think I have a book for you. I'll check and see, but maybe you can get a hold of me and I can give it to you.
Doug, I think what you're referring to is Aurora Ministries. And my speech is talking. And also, I know, having been with the Lutheran Church, that there are a couple groups that do materials for Lutheran. Lutheran Braille Workers and Lutheran Library for the Blind. And I'm sure, like you say, a lot of the other churches do that as well.
Also, National Braille Press puts out a list every year of transcribers. I don't think they're volunteer, but they do maintain a transcription list of people that do this across the country.
Thank you. I'll be in touch with you, Doug.
I have a question. I've been considering doing a small bit of business producing jumbo Braille material for older blind readers. Any of you doing jumbo Braille transcribing?
No one. This is Meg. No one in my group is doing jumbo Braille transcribing.
I'm curious whether the rules for transcription would be at all different for jumbo versus non-jumbo Braille, especially in the area of hyphenating words at ends of lines and how many spaces to utilize to represent paragraphs and headings and the like, whether you would want it to be, whether the white space would also be jumbo or just the individual characters.
I would think that the only thing that varied jumbo Braille to regular Braille would be the number of spaces on the line plus the number of lines on a page.
I think you're right. I think that the same rules apply as much as they can, and of course that's always the issue because jumbo Braille takes up more room on a page, and I'm still looking at the whole project as a possibility and trying to find electronic equipment that does the same size Braille as the Perkins Braillers do, and so far I haven't come up with anything.
And also, I've always wondered what Jiffy Braille is, and also, the name is Code Transcription Course built into the regular transcription course. Those are my two questions.
The NEMET Braille transcription course is different. Generally, they recommend that you are certified as a Braille transcriber before you even enter the NEMET Braille transcription course.
Thank you.
I think you have to be certified as a Braille transcriber, a literary Braille transcriber, before you can take the NEMET transcription course. And I think they usually recommend that you have done a couple of literary books or other kinds of books before you try the NEMET transcription course.
This is Bonnie again. I would like to know if it seems to me that this obviously transcription, Braille transcription, and Braille proofreading go hand in hand, and it would seem to me that since it would be difficult for many people, many blind people are not married and live alone, as I do, and I would imagine that many of them may not be able to have the help or get the help that they need with being able to do the transcription, but obviously they could do the proofreading. And I want to know if any of your programs do a corresponding hand-in-hand kind of situation that would include both Braille transcription and Braille proofreading, because they seem so very much to go together. Because I know that one of you or two of you mentioned that you don't actually read Braille in terms of touch Braille. And I remember a teacher of mine, an itinerant teacher, or a resource teacher, I guess they're called, when I was first in special ed, beginning in school, she said that she was always told not to read Braille deal with her eyes because that was very difficult on your eyes. And, of course, she was a sighted person, and I was wondering what you think about that and whether you have that as part of your arrangement.
Bonnie, the Braille transcribing course is available for blind people. It's in Braille materials. If you want to be a Braille transcriber and you have no sighted help, you are allowed to use grade 1 Braille materials for your trial manuscript.
So you end up reading in grade 1 and transcribing and formatting in grade 2 to meet your manuscript requirement. That's correct?
Absolutely. That's all you need.
I have a couple of friends who work at library systems that have in-house transcription available, and they're using that method to do their manuscript. It's also my understanding that each Braille transcriptionist in training, if they turn in their material in electronic form as opposed to embossed form, they have to nonetheless do so in such a way that it is fully formatted as it would be if it were hard copy embossed?
Actually, for the Braille transcribing course that's offered through NLS, you can't submit materials in electronic format. It has to be in hard copy.
Well, my point before was that I would think that this would be difficult. I'm not saying that this can't be done by blind people. However, I think that for many people, it's not all that practical. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think the venue for blind people in many cases would be in the Braille proofreading area. And I guess that's what I was trying to get to.
Okay, I understand your question now. Actually, in order to do the proofreading course, which is also offered through NLS, you must be a certified Braille transcriber. So there's where the situation is.
Yeah, I think that might have been just a bit of an old wives' tale. I know that schools for the blind were very concerned that those who had low vision were attempting to read Braille visually rather than tactually. But I know of very, very few teachers of the visually impaired who know Braille, who tactually read it. The vast majority of them sight read, and in fact complain rather bitterly about interpoint Braille because it complicates the process of sight reading Braille.
Sight reading interpoint Braille is just almost impossible. That is really extremely difficult, and I must admit that trying to read Braille by sight, we have to have it in a good light because it is difficult because the dots are the same color as the background. Now, that's one nice thing about the computer programs. We get black dots on a white background or white dots on a black background. Mostly, and the one I use, it's black dots on a white background, and it's much easier to read. Plus, we have little bitty dots, they call guide dots, for the empty dots, so to speak, in the cell, which is really handy. So it's much easier than reading the hard copy Braille when I proofread on the screen. That's lots easier. Or if I can even print out black dots on white paper if I want to go sit in an easy chair without my computer somewhere and proofread. And that's lots easier than trying to read the hard copy Braille. I don't think it's injured my eyes reading the hard copy Braille. I just had to be sitting in the right kind of light to do it.
Would you explain what interface or interpoint Braille? What is that?
Two-sided Braille copies.
Now, when Braille is embossed in volume form frequently, in fact, almost always when it comes to NLS books, they emboss one side of the page and then they flip it over and they emboss on the reverse side, carefully offsetting the dots so they don't mash the dots on the original or side A as they emboss side B, called interpoint Braille. That means visually speaking, when you're looking at the page, you're seeing a series of dots that are raised off the surface of the page, embossed, and some that look like they are engraved. And the engraved ones, the indent rather than the outdent, if you will, creates difficulty for those who are sight-reading Braille.
Thank you. I love to learn. I really appreciate that. I had never heard of that before. I know exactly what you mean, though. Thank you.
What is Jiffy Braille, while we're talking about different kinds of Braille?
Jiffy Braille is a term coined at National Braille Press as a way to explain a process by which they emboss Braille and send it out without first proofreading it in order to get the Braille out quickly. They at National Braille Press are very persnickety, and I love it, very persnickety about the quality of Braille they put out. So anytime it's unproofread, they use the I think it's a copywritten term, Jiffy Braille.
In other words, we call that quick and dirty.
I'm curious, when you get those books, the ones that are unproofread, do they offer them for a lower price?
In fact, that is one of the things that allows NBP, National Braille Press, to put out some books more cheaply. NBP, as a general policy, puts out books and makes them available in Braille for the same price as the cover price of the print book, dramatically less expensive than the actual cost of their production. But when you get things like Our Special Magazine, any of the NBP written and produced books, as opposed to transcribed from a print copy, you'll see down on the title page and maybe repeated at the back of the magazine that this is produced in Jiffy Braille trademark. And elsewhere it might even describe what Jiffy Braille means.
I will have to look at the computer manuals I bought from them because I was amazed at the price because they are very relatively inexpensive, I think. I think they're a wonderful deal, and it may be that they were produced in this manner.
Bonnie, how is the Braille in the Jiffy Braille?
Well, I can only say that from the manuals that I have, I bought several of their computer books, and they're excellent. I would have never noticed any difference, and I am a very good Braille reader, and I would love to be a proofreader. I'd actually love to be reading books to people. That's what I do on Fillmore some of the time.
These days, with so many different electronics gadgets that we have with scanning and file downloads and whatnot, even Jiffy Braille should be getting better and better all the time.
Where I've noticed errors in these Jiffy Braille produced documents, it has to do more with transposed symbols, an S where there should have been a WH, a TH where there should have been a P, things along those lines. Maybe an EN and an IN will be inversed, those kinds of things. But it's still rare, maybe one character wrong out of two or three pages of content. That's not a bad rate, actually.
I put out a Braille newsletter for our state affiliate, which is my responsibility, and I do the brailing, tearing the paper apart, binding, stuffing in the envelopes, labeling, and it is a lot more time-consuming than most blind people know, I'm sure.
Of course, what you could always do is do like the Talking Book Library in Florida and get a burster, which does, if once it's been printed out in fanfold sheets, it separates the pages, collates it, and does it all, and you can do a whole volume in a book in about 3 minutes. The disadvantage is it costs about $20,000 for a burster.
If we had $20,000 to spend on that, I'd hire somebody to do this for me.
Yeah, it sounds like the kind of work you're doing with that sounds pretty tedious at times.
It's a good way to read a talking book. You can listen, and binding Braille is pretty mindless once you get a rhythm for how you're doing it, but it does take some time.
Okay, are there any other questions anybody would like to ask our transcribing friends who are with us this evening before we bring this edition of Tuesday Topics to a close?
I have a question. I don't feel like they really address the computer program's difficulties with translating material into Braille, and I don't mean to minimize the transcriber's responsibility, but I would like to get some feedback from you all on what I realize you're not using Duxbury, which is the program I'm familiar with, but how good is the program that you're using as far as translating into Braille from print?
I think it's excellent. I was listening to you all talk about Jiffy Braille and thinking about Braille 2000. Of course, I usually do direct input, but I have had my husband do some scanning. It's just difficult to scan Nemeth, which is what I do, the Nemeth and the chemistry. But when I do literary stuff, sometimes he scans, or like with the VABF newsletter, I get it in an RTF file and translate it I bring that into the Braille 2000 program and it converts it to Braille. And I was thinking if I just sent it off like it is, it would really be pretty good. It just has some funny things that it translates weirdly. One of them I came across recently was thermophore, where it used the OF contraction. And one of my favorites of all times was when the back translators came out. The word chemotherapy, it translated mother in the middle of it, which I would never have seen mother in the middle of chemotherapy. But it used the mother contraction in it. So there are some odd little quirky things that it just doesn't catch. But as far as a translation, a backward translation, you know, from print into, well, it's a forward translation, I guess, from print into Braille, I think it does a super fantastic job.
One of my biggest concerns is the number of individuals who have opted out of learning Braille, thinking that it's a hard and cumbersome system. I feel that it's anything but hard or cumbersome, to be honest with you. If you're a native Braille user, I don't think that we individually feel that it's a difficult system to deal with. But sighted people, for the most part, look at it and see it as complicated and difficult. They can't imagine themselves touching dots and being able to make sense out of them and to deal with the rules that we utilize to determine by context what a given symbol or group of dots means. I also think that there's going to be a great future in Braille as a result of technology. People frequently blame technology as the reason that Braille is on the decline rather than the increase. But I think with refreshable Braille, with what I've seen people be able to do in terms of quickly improving their Braille reading skills when they're not having to track lines, but seeing Braille one line at a time, such as is done with refreshable Braille displays, that we'll see a real resurgence of its importance. One of the things I wanted to ask everybody about kind of as a closing topic here is the changing nature of the Braille code. Those who know me know that my wife, Kim Charlson, is the current chair of the Braille Authority of North America and recently came back from meetings of the International Council on English Braille from Cape Town, South Africa, where they had their once every other year meeting. Yeah, we've been talking about different Braille codes, including Danny was saying NUBS. What's NUB stand for, Danny? Remind me. But also the Unified English Braille Code. You had mentioned the issue of... Yeah, I know. Danny's saying he hates the Unified Braille Code. I don't know that many of us here in the United States, certainly neither the two consumer organizations, the American Council of the Blind or the National Federation of the Blind, believe in the value of the Unified English Braille Code. There are a number of things that we've taken for granted over time as saying that in fact, that whole process of supporting not carrying contractions across syllable breaks would really make it difficult for us to sound out words. How do you feel about changing the English Braille code in a significant way from that you've been using all of these years?
I didn't like what I saw about the Unified Braille code that I was glad to see that they quit thinking about. I have mixed feelings about NUBS, which is Nemeth Universal Braille System. It makes a lot more sense, but maybe it does to me because I'm a Nemeth transcriber, and I'm used to using the Nemeth Braille code for everything because in the math books, we use a Nemeth code for the text part as well as the technical part. So for me, it works for everything. I went to a workshop on the NUBS, the Nemeth Universal Braille System, at our VAVF conference the first week of April, and it's very interesting, and I think it still has some bugs to work out of it. But I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's going to be difficult to change when everybody's used to the old system. So I don't know. I keep hearing people say not in my lifetime, but I knew a lot of people who said they would quit Brailing rather than learn the original Unified Braille code that was being considered. I haven't heard that so much with NUBS.
Well, there's many, many subjects that blind and visually impaired people speak about when they get together. I think one of the more popular one is, do you read Braille? I read Braille. How do you get Braille? What do you think of the UEBC and NUBS and all of the different issues associated with the growing and changing nature of converting print into Braille? I really want to thank those who came here this evening to share with us their experience in transcribing Braille. And just strictly on a personal note, thank each one of you for volunteering such a significant portion of your lives to make the written word available to me and my fellow blind citizens. We relied on you to learn Braille. We relied on you to enjoy curling up on a cold, wet day in our living rooms, the Braille book in our laps. We frequently found that the first book that we ever owned was a hand-transcribed children's book done by volunteer Braillists. Whether producing Braille from inside of the four walls of a prison or in people's living rooms, whether it's done by hand on a Perkins Braille writer or by transcription through computer means, we blind and visually impaired people would like to extend to all those transcribers out there a heartfelt thank you for all of your efforts. This has been Tuesday Topics. Thank you for being here this evening, and tune in next week to hear the next edition of Tuesday Topics.